Thank you very much for joining us. Fighting between Sudan's army and the nation's biggest paramilitary force has entered its third day. This is a scene right now in Khartoum where there's been more heavy gunfire into Monday morning. There was a brief lull in violence on Sunday during a three-hour humanitarian pause. Fighting between the army and the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group began on Saturday. Medical sources say at least 97 people have been killed and hundreds injured since then. Now, this is a state of play in Sudan, with fighting now spread across the country, but the worst of it has been centered in the capital, Khartoum, and the neighboring city of Omdurman. Both sides have been vying for control of the state broadcaster, the presidential palace, the airport, and various military bases. Let's get an update with our correspondent, Hiba Morgan, who joins us live from Khartoum. Hiba, bring us up to speed with the situation this morning. How intense is the fighting today?
Well, it hasn't stopped since the early hours of Monday morning. And I don't know if you can hear the sound of the heavy artillery that's being fired around us. And that's coming from the vicinity of the general command of the army headquarters. We understand from army sources that the rapid support forces tried to launch attacks on the general command headquarters, and the army has been fighting back ever since. There's also the sound of fighter jets in several over several residential districts here in Khartoum City, especially the northern part of the capital and the southern part of the capital, where there are rapid support bases. Residents say they can hear the sound of the heavy artillery. They can hear the sound of anti-aircraft missiles being fired by rapid support forces at the Sudanese army's fighter jets, which are flying overhead. And around us, you can still hear the sound of what seems to be the confrontation between the RSF and the military. It's still not clear who has the upper hand in this battle. Both sides claim that they have control of all major facilities, but it's not clear yet who has control of which facility and for how long they'll be able to hold on to it fully.
Okay, so we can indeed hear the sound of gunfire behind you there. And as you say, unclear still after 3 days of violence, who is in control or who has the upper hand. There was a brief humanitarian pause on Sunday, Hiba. Were people able to get out and get food essentials?
Well, both sides on Sunday agreed to a three-hour ceasefire to allow for the opening of humanitarian corridors, and they targeted specific people who were trapped in the vicinity of fighting areas, that is, areas around the presidential palace, like schools and hospitals, and around the general command headquarters, as well as where there are RSF bases. But that three-hour ceasefire did not last. It lasted for about an hour or so before fighting resumed, at least around the vicinity of the army headquarters and the presidential palace. Now, people in Khartoum are not used to this fully, despite the fact that there have been so many conflicts around the country, never in Khartoum. So for many people, they don't know what to do. They were not prepared for a conflict between the two sides. They were not prepared. They did not store extra food. They did not store water. Many neighborhoods are out of water and power. So lots of confusion. And then there's the issue of the injured. Hundreds of people have been injured. Many of them can't access medical facilities because of this insecurity and the violence on the streets of Khartoum.
There's a lot of diplomatic effort right now to try and end this fighting. Talk to us about what we can expect, Hiba, and is there today a viable mediation effort?
Well, the Intergovernmental Authority for Development says it is going to send envoys, specifically the head of South Sudan, Kenya, and Djibouti, to talk to the two sides, the Rapid Support Force commander and the commander of the army, to end the conflict. But it's not clear if they will be able to land. Again, part of the current fighting is ongoing around the airport, and on the tarmac of the airport, there's been reports of fire as well. So it's not clear if they'll be able to land because they were reported to arrive today on Monday. Now, will that be viable? Both sides say that they want to take control of the other. The RSF says it will not stop fighting until it takes control of all the army bases, while the army says it has designated the RSF as a rebel group and will set out to destroy it. So it's not clear if any mediation will have any impact on both sides.
Hiba, thank you very much for the moment. Hiba Morgan live there in Khartoum, where gunfire continues this Monday morning after 3 days of fighting between the army and the paramilitary force, the Rapid forces. And the fighting is threatening, of course, to worsen what was already a dire humanitarian situation in Sudan. The UN Humanitarian Office says about 15.8 million people, roughly a third of the population, will need assistance this year. There are 3.7 million internally displaced people who need help. Around 4 million children under the age of five and pregnant women are acutely malnourished and need life-saving services. And as many as 11.7 million people don't have enough food to eat. Joining us now on the phone from Khartoum is Dalia Mohamed, who's a resident of the Sudanese capital, Dalia Mohamed Abdelmonem, and also an activist. Dalia, thank you so much for speaking to us. I understand you live next to the airport in Khartoum. Tell us first what the night was like for you and your family.
First of all, thank you for having me. It was really... It started from around 3:30, 4 o'clock. We could just hear the fighter just flying over our heads, over our homes. And the sound of the weapons or the ammunition that was being used was different to what we were used to. It wasn't just bullets or artillery attacks. It was like a whistling sound. It's like something being dropped. So it hasn't let up. I mean, they go quiet for 10, 15 minutes, and then they start all over again. And it's really beginning to take a toll on all of us, but there's not much we can do. We're all stuck indoors, and we just have to try to make the best of it if we can.
You say you're all stuck indoors, Dalia. There was a brief pause yesterday in fighting. Were you able to get out at all, to get food, to get essentials? Were you able to venture out?
Not in our area. If anything, that passage was supposed to start from 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. The fighting intensified from 4 o'clock until 6 o'clock, which is when... we were supposed to break our fast because it is still Ramadan, so we couldn't do anything. But I do know people in other areas of Khartoum were able to go out and get some supplies. But there's also another problem because a lot of factories haven't been working, and there's been power cuts throughout the city. So a lot of the supermarkets, their produce and their products have gone bad. So even if we were able to get out. I don't think we would have been able to find anything. Bakeries aren't working. You know, there's no movement between the urban and the rural areas, so no fresh produce. Mm. I'm imagining if there's any packaged foods, they probably would have gone bad by now.
Right.
So,
as you say, Dalia.
I think mainly the passage was for those who are injured or those who need medical care or medical attention.
Okay.
More than for those who need to get supplies.
Do you know whether those people were able to reach hospitals?
I honestly know. I don't know.
Okay.
On that sense, I don't know.
Okay.
As
you said, Dalia, this is a very difficult time. I can only imagine what you and your family are going through. This is happening during the holy month of Ramadan when people fast most of the day, during the day. And, you know, you have Eid, the end of Ramadan, the Eid holiday coming in just a few days. Tell us about what life has been like for you and your family, for the residents of Khartoum these past 3 days. Are you worried that things could get worse?
I think it will get worse simply because this uptake in using fighter jets has really raised the stakes. I don't know how they will come down from that, how they will even agree to meet. Even if the mediators are able to get into Sudan, will they be able to do anything? Because both Burhan and Hemeti have said really strongly worded statements, and they don't seem to want to back down. There is no desire from either side to take a step back and maybe say, okay, let's talk or let's discuss or let's negotiate. And that's my fear, that they've crossed that line and there's no going back. They will just continue until one of them remains standing or, I don't know, something happens. But I don't think diplomacy is going to work.
Right.
I don't know what
is there a sense of who has the upper hand right now?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
We don't know who's in control. We don't know who controls the airport. We don't know who controls the national broadcaster. We know nothing. I mean, we don't know. I mean, I live next to the airport. I have no idea who's outside. All I hear is just the sound of the artillery and the bullets, but we have no idea who is who and who and which is, you know, which side has started off firing at the other. Mm. We don't know. I don't think anyone does know.
Yeah, a very difficult time.
And we can't
take
the statements they release at face value.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dahlia, for talking to us.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. Dahlia Mohamed Abdelmonem, a resident of Khartoum, telling us about her experience over these past 3 days as intense fighting continues in Sudan between rival forces. Well, top diplomats from the US and UK have called for an immediate end to the violence. Speaking on the sidelines of the G7 Foreign Ministers Summit, a meeting rather, in Japan. And we've got Al Jazeera's Rob McBride, who is there for us, joining us live now. Tell us about what's been said there about Sudan, Rob.
That's right. There have been a lot of expressions of concern by participants in this G7 foreign ministers meeting since they started arriving here in Japan Saturday through Sunday. The latest statement has come from Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, and it came at a photo opportunity just ahead of a bilateral meeting with his British counterpart, James Cleverly. He expressed his concern about what's going on. Blinken said that the people of Sudan want democracy and they want a resumption of the talks that were moving towards civilian rule. And he says the way to allow that to continue, he says, is for the military to get back to their barracks. Let's listen to what he said.
A strongly held view, again, across all of our partners on the need for an immediate ceasefire and a return to talks. Talks that were very promising in putting Sudan on the path to a full transition to civilian-led government. People in Sudan want the military back in the barracks. They want democracy. They want a civilian-led government. Sudan needs to return to that path.
This meeting has continued. Probably the most important session this Monday has been on the war in Ukraine, with the G7 foreign ministers agreeing to continue their united support for Ukraine, continuing sanctions against Russia, and also looking at ways of stopping Russia getting around those sanctions and stopping getting weapons from third countries. There are claims that Russia has been receiving weapons from North Korea and fears that China might also start to supply Russia with weapons.
Thank you very much for that, Rob McBride, live for us there in Karuizawa, Japan. Thank you. Now, China says it's willing to have